So hi, I'm Allison Link, a data enthusiast and data visualization enthusiast.
Hi, my name is Katie Jones-Schmidt. I work for the Center for Energy and Environment, and my specific project is the City of Minneapolis's Energy Benchmarking Program.
Great. Do you want to just explain a little bit about your background and kind of how you got into this work?
Yes. Actually, after college, I fell into energy benchmarking. I was a part of a program called Green Corps, which is an AmeriCorps program. I actually studied, before that I had studied agricultural and biological engineering, so I was really interested in water, but they threw me into energy. That was the position that was open. So I worked there for a year, and I've been in energy benchmarking with a couple of companies ever since.
Great. So just falling into benchmarking.
Mm-hmm.
And is that something that you can kind of recommend as a post-college career path? Was that, do you have a sense of like how that served you in your roles now, AmeriCorps?
Yeah, AmeriCorps was great because it allowed me to, you know, make the connections to get another job outside of just the, you know, the stipend job right out of college. And yeah, energy benchmarking is growing throughout the country, and more cities are adopting policies like Minneapolis's. So there is a growing need for experts in this field.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk a little bit about that buzzword, energy benchmarking. What does that even mean?
So energy benchmarking is the measurement and tracking of building energy use to ensure that a building is using energy as expected in terms of operations, as well as in comparison to its peers and with regards to improvements. For example, it answers questions like, is this building using more energy this year than it did last year? It can also answer the question, how is this building doing compared to its neighbor? Is it using more energy than its neighbor or less? And what is the performance of the building after a building improvement? Say, if we installed LED lighting, you would expect that the building to use less energy, and this is a verification tool for that.
Okay, so almost like a physical, like an annual physical for a building, a little bit.
Pretty much, it is a doctor's checkup for buildings.
Cool. are there any kind of questions that energy benchmarking sort of doesn't answer?
It only answers high-level energy questions, so it gives you a comprehensive view of the building and its energy use. It doesn't tell you exactly what the issues are in the building. It won't say that, you know, it's this ventilation equipment that is stuck open and that's why you're wasting energy, but it will tell you if there is a problem at the high level.
Okay. Great. So a little bit, if you know your car is sort of squeaking, but you don't necessarily know why.
Yes.
Have to dig under the hood for that a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So can you explain, in Minneapolis specifically, what is the history of energy benchmarking? How did it come about? Where is it going?
Mm-hmm. So it actually started back a little bit after the recession, or kind of during the recession. Minneapolis and St. Paul got together to form this coalition called the Think Green Initiative. And the focus of that was to adopt or to think of strategies, policy strategies, as well as program strategies to increase green jobs in the metro area. And one of the ideas that came out of that was this new concept called energy benchmarking. In 2009, New York City was the first city to adopt an ordinance that required buildings to benchmark their energy and then report it to the city. And so the city of Minneapolis, actually council member Elizabeth Glidden was part of that Think Green initiative. And so I thought it was such a great idea that she actually brought it home and worked with the sustainability office to get a policy passed.
Interesting. So we basically kind of took the lead from other cities, especially New York, and have implemented some things there?
Yes. We were actually the first city in the Midwest, just a couple months before Chicago, so we can claim that with pride.
Sorry, Chicago.
And we were seventh in the nation to adopt such a policy.
Nice. And so how has the policy then been rolling out in the city for benchmarking? Who's required to do it? Which buildings need to get on board?
Mm-hmm. So our policy affects large commercial buildings. So private commercial buildings that are greater than 50,000 square feet in size, and all public commercial buildings, so like your city, county, parks, and school buildings greater than 25,000 square feet. The first year of the requirement, only the public buildings had to report. And then the private commercial buildings were phased in two groups. First, the buildings 100,000 square feet and above reported, and then the following year, private buildings 50,000 square feet and above had to report. So it was kind of it was actually a 4-year rollout because of that. And part of it was the buildings in their first year of the reporting requirement just submitted their data to the city. In the second year, the city made that data publicly available, which is the data that you get to work with now.
Great. Just for those of us who don't work with square footage in buildings very much, to get a sense of how big these things are, so like 25,000 square feet, how big of a building is that? What kind of space would that be? Like a store, or?
I would have to look at my data, but I know McPhail is about 50,000. So the McPhail Center for Music in downtown is about 50,000. The YWCA in Uptown is about 50,000. So those are kind of some rough estimates for you. On the other end of the spectrum, the IDS Center, the tallest building in Minneapolis, is over 1 million square feet. Okay. So you can kind of see the range in there.
Okay, so there are probably bound to be some outliers. That's a good example of an outlier in this data set that's going to be really a pretty large square footage. Mm-hmm. Can you think of outliers on the low end of the spectrum?
Yes, actually, the Park and Rec Board, they benchmark all of their buildings. They just have for a long period of time. And so they put in, you know, even their small community centers that are 10,000 or 5,000 square feet. So those will be on the lower end of the spectrum. They're not required to report, but they do anyway.
Great. Well, and as long as we're talking about outlier, or actually, let's maybe go into some of the types of variables in the data set. So like what types of information is collected? And maybe with each of those things, what sources of error might also be involved in those that information? Because we know nothing's perfect. Data is only as good as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, what information is involved and what error might we just want to keep considering when we're using this data?
Yeah, so benchmarking essentially marries two siloed information or silos of data. A building manager or building owner has information on the square footage of the building, the building type, the occupancy of the building, all of those building characteristics. The utility has all of the energy information. So on the building side, the key pieces of information that we collect are the building square footage, the building type, and occupancy. On the utility data side, we collect the usage by meter. Yeah, so starting with the errors for the building data, one of our biggest concerns is incorrect square footage. So the city knows the square footage of buildings based on the tax records. But as many people have probably seen, the tax records are not always the most reliable data set. And so over the past few years, we've been working hard to make sure that we're getting the right data, so getting the right square footage entered into the reports, because it's very key for that very important metric of energy use per square foot. If your square footage is off, your metric is of no use. So that has been a major issue. On the utility side, we have concerns sometimes about missing meters. It seems like, you know, a building energy usage is too low for that building type. We also have concerns about incorrect units for energy. For example, city water is measured in kilogallons, but that's not really apparent on your bill. And so that can be difficult for a regular person who's not used to dealing with water utility bills to know that. And so making sure that is communicated is something we have to do a lot of. Another issue we run into is incorrect time frames. So the city ordinance requires a calendar year's worth of data. So from January 1 to December 31st. But of course, utility bills don't fall neatly into that time frame. So that requires that a building owner enter utility meter information, starting with that utility bill that's back in December, and then carries over into January. And the same thing on the other end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes that's it's another point of trouble there.
So Are there any interesting trends that you've seen in the data so far? I know it's still sort of new in this process of collecting it, but just anything that's struck you or anything that you're maybe hoping to see over time?
Yeah, that it is, like you said, it is early. We have 3 years worth of data for public buildings, and so you can kind of say that 3 years make a trend. And we have noticed a 7% reduction in average site EUI, which is the energy use intensity. So that is a good trend. That's a trend that we like to see. Overall, we want to see energy usage decrease in the city for the city to be able to make its climate action plan goals.
And are there any other interesting questions that you can think of that this data might one day help answer, or other ways it might be expanded that would be interesting that you can think of?
Yeah, the entire point of energy benchmarking is to answer big questions, such as which buildings are least efficient in the city. And we want this data to be public and for regular businesses, so energy service providers, the utilities who run energy efficiency programs, as well as nonprofits that run energy efficiency programs, to like take a look at this data and target the buildings that are the least efficient for their programs. Overall, it's the if they do that, it is the most cost-effective way for making our buildings more efficient.
So it sounds like part of the importance of this data too is that it is a public data set. Do you have a sense of like how the policy was created on that, or was the will always there to make it public, or just other senses of why the publicness is important?
Yeah, that's actually part of the theory of it. It's not just energy benchmarking, it's energy benchmarking and disclosure. We just shortened the name because it's long. But that was that's how New York rolled out with it. That's how Seattle rolled out with it in San Francisco. And that's really what we want to do. We want to create a change in the marketplace. We want so not only the energy service providers in that industry to target the buildings that are least efficient, we want buildings themselves to realize, how efficient they are. Are they more efficient than their competitive peer? Like, for example, hotels, they're constantly in competition with one another. And any way that they can lower their operating costs is good for them and good business. Same thing with offices. They're always trying to attract new tenants, and any new amenity or certification, such as Energy Star certification, which shows that a building is a very high energy performer, so uses less energy per square foot. Those are good things, and we want the market to understand that and use energy more as a criteria when for making decisions.
Great. So yeah, it's a good testament to the value of data when it's shared, I think. Awesome. All right. Good luck working with this data. We're glad that we could get a little bit of the backstory of it. So thanks for explaining a little bit.
No problem. Have fun.